In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, one God, amen. Today is the first week of the Holy Great Fast, and the Church reads to us from the Sermon on the Mountain in Matthew chapter 6. And it tells us something regarding our eyes. It says, "The lamp of the body is the eye. If therefore your eye is good, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If therefore the light that is in you is darkness, how great is that darkness?" The eyes, I think if we can make, compare all of the senses, it's the one that maybe we might value the most. And through our eyes, we see and take in the whole world around us. And it's also on the same note, as we take in the world through our eyes, the world sees us through our eyes. So it works both ways. How does the world see us through our own eyes? He said in the Bible, it says, because if the eye is bad, the whole body will be full of darkness. So if the eye is bad, the whole body will be full of darkness. So what enters into the eye enters into the mind, and then from the mind into the heart, and then the heart into the actions. So based on how we conduct ourselves will tell us how the eye is. And some people who are actually very observant can read people by their eyes. They can see if they're angry, if they're upset, if they're maybe lying or whatever. You can all tell this by the eyes. And then the Lord also says, "Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven." So through our eyes, we see the world, and through our eyes, the world also sees us. And actually, in the field of ophthalmology, they say that the eye is the window of the body. They can look in your eye, and they can kind of get a glance or a glimpse of your overall health. They can tell if you might have high blood pressure. They can tell if you have diabetes. They can tell if you have liver disease. So they can tell many things just simply by looking in your eye. St. Augustine says, "The eye is the intention with which we perform our actions." The eye is the intention by which we perform all of our actions. So the question I'd like to pose for us today is, my eye good or is it bad? I'll run through many examples from the Bible of good eyes and bad eyes. The purpose of this is so each of us can assess my own eye, not the eye of my husband or my wife or my children, but my own eye. And with the hopes of recognizing, maybe if I have an evil eye, of how to make it a good eye. And let's imitate more of the good qualities that are in the good eyes. We'll begin with the negative or the evil eye first. The first evil eye is the lustful eye, the eye of lust. We are surrounded today in a media that is obsessed with lust, that's obsessed with, these bad images, to the point where they're being thrown down our throat. And we find when we give ourselves into this kind of media, we become to develop this lustful eye. We can't look at somebody as a friend anymore. It becomes now a lustful look. It's like Potiphar's wife. Joseph was in and out of the palace all the time. Joseph, no problem, has no problem. He's a righteous man and fears God. But Potiphar's wife, every time she looked at him when he was handsome, this began to churn in her heart, and she began to desire him. In Genesis, it tells us, "So it was, as she spoke to Joseph day by day, that he did not heed her to lie with her or to be with her." So day by day, she would ask him, and he would say, "No, forget about it." And then it came to one point where she was overcome with lust, where she grabbed him from his garment. And of course, we know that he left the garment and he fled. And we notice here that with the introduction of sin and lust, a person will transform what is good to what is evil and what is lustful. Somebody, maybe like Joseph, who is exemplary, we always use him in the Bible, and it maybe doesn't mention any wrong fault that Joseph did. But this lady, when she looked at Joseph, she didn't look at him as a person who's righteous and virtuous and someone I can imitate. But it looked for him as a selfish way, that this is a person I will lust after. Do I do this? Do I do this with my brethren? Am I caught in these types of sins? Not only the lust of the flesh in terms of the body, but also lust of food. We're now in the time of fasting, and you can expect that this temptation will increase. How many times have we heard, Abuna, I broke my fast because of a cheeseburger. I was with my friends and they were all drinking milkshakes and I couldn't help it. Whatever the excuse might come. You know what this is like? This is like Esau, right? Esau, he was working out in the field. He comes back and he tells his brother Jacob that I'm dying of hunger. Make me something. And he doesn't make him macaroni bechamel or haga. He makes him what? It's lentils, right? So even for the sake of these lentils, he forsakes his birthright. For the sake of a food that is going to be consumed and you'll forget about it in an hour, we're going to break our fast and our commitment to the Lord. Also, the lust of riches and possessions. We notice from when the people of Israel conquered Jericho, God instructed them to destroy everything and take only the gold and silver for the temple, for the purposes of the temple. But there's a man whose name was Achan, the son of Carmi. He came and he stole some of the riches and hid it in his house. And it was because of this theft and this greed in his eye that he caused his brethren to lose a battle against a very small city called Ai. So he lusted after possessions and after riches. And the result of this is the expense of others who are around me. If I am a father or a mother or anybody who is after simply riches, this will be at the cost or the expense of your loved ones. And we saw this in this story. This is the lustful eye, the discontented eye, the eye that is not content with anything. This one, I thought of the people of Israel. They're going through the wilderness. God takes them out by 10 plagues. They saw miraculously done before Pharaoh, and the plagues were done to the Egyptians, but not to them. So this was amazing, right? And then after this, he takes them out. They follow Moses, this great man. Then they see and witness the Red Sea part before them. They get on the other side, and what happens? It's a long journey. I'm hungry. So then they start desiring the meat that was in Egypt and the drink that they had in Egypt, to the point where they said, what? It says, the whole congregation of the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the children of Israel said to them, oh, that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt. When we sat by the pots of meat, and when we ate bread to the full. For you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. So they're discontent. They're discontent with what God was wanting to do with them. To them, they would rather die in Egypt by cruelty, but as long as we're full, as long as my belly is full. So they're discontent. Oh, well, look at this person, he has the latest gadget. Why don't I have the latest gadget? This person has the latest model of car. This person has a newer house than I do. Let's just be content. The evil eye is the eye that's not content, that is discontented. It's always looking at, I want this and that in another person. There's the merciless eye. Number three, the merciless eye. And this we see in this passage of the rich man and Lazarus. The rich man who lived luxuriously in the world, and he had everything he wanted and more. But when it came to this poor man, Lazarus, and the Bible witnesses here in Luke 16, it says, but there was a certain beggar named Lazarus. So he was a beggar, full of sores, who was laid at his gate, desiring to be fed with the crumbs which fell from the rich man's table. So this poor man, who wasn't only hungry, but he was also sick, and he was visibly sick. He had sores on him. This guy had no mercy and no compassion. He didn't give them anything to heal his wounds, or any food even, and when he saw the dogs licking his sores, he didn't care. And it's because in this passage that this person was condemned to hell. It's because he had no mercy. You look at also like the person in Ahab, King Ahab in the Old Testament. Again, very wealthy, has everything he needs. That this poor little fellow named Naboth, who was next door to him, who had his vineyard or had a garden, and this was all that he had, and this was his livelihood. Ahab wanted a vegetable garden. He had like flowers, and now he wanted a wet vegetable garden, right? And because it was close and convenient, he wanted the garden. So he goes and asks the guy, can I have the garden? He says, no, this is all I have. This is my inheritance. I can't give it to you. So then Ahab goes to his house, is pouting and moaning as if, you know, he had lost something and he's very sad and gets depressed. His wife Jezebel, as wicked as she is, she came and said, what's wrong? And she said, well, this guy won't give me his land. And she's like, get a hold of yourself. You're the king. Let me tell you what I'm going to do. She conspired and killed him and got the land for him. This guy was merciless. He took the only thing that this poor young man had and killed him for some land, for some vegetables. Merciless. When I see my fellow brethren who are in need or who might need money, who might need affection, who might need a gentle word, who might need forgiveness, who might need acceptance, am I there to give this or am I merciless? No, this person did this to me 20 years ago and I still remember it. Number four is the eye of mockery. The eye of mockery. If you remember, when the Lord Christ submitted to the soldiers in the Garden of Gethsemane, that he was taken and eventually made himself to Pilate and the Roman soldiers. Fell into the hand of the Roman soldiers, and it says that they mocked him. It says, and they bowed the knee before him and mocked him, saying, Hail, King of the Jews. So they're making fun of him because he says he was the King of the Jews. They put the crown of thorns on him and put it on his head. Do we do the same with our friends and our coworkers? Do we make fun of them? Do we mock them? If maybe somebody has a speech impediment, do I make fun of them? If somebody walks different, do I make fun of them? Mockery is making a joke at the expense of other people. We shouldn't be entertained at the expense of somebody else, because I don't think we would like to be anybody's entertainment without our permission and without us being there. Number four is the overcritical eye, the evil eye. The fifth evil eye is the overcritical eye, the eye that only sees negative in everything, not just people, but you'll find it in everything. A person comes into the church and comes and finds, oh, the pews don't match the iconostasis. This is dirty. This is that. The servants are this. Abuna is this. Everything's negative. Everything's negative. And mind you, parents, when we are negative and overcritical with our children, they will grow and be the same way. And you know what? They'll be critical of you as well. So we will foster this in our children if this is how we are. Let's look. Do I have an overcritical eye? I mentioned here overcritical, because there can be a positive criticism as well, and constructive criticism. But I mean overcritical, where everything is bad. You'll find a husband come complain about his wife, or a wife complain about her husband. He always is keza, 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 or this, this, and this. She always does this. She's always this, always that. And as if they did nothing good the whole 20 or 30 years of marriage. There's something good in everybody. There's something good in everybody. It's just it takes the pure and holy eye to see it. If you remember the sinful woman that came into Simon's house, she came weeping at his feet, at Christ's feet, and washed his feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. Simon said to himself that if this man was a prophet, the Lord Jesus, he would have known who and what kind of woman this is, which is a sinner. But Jesus looked at her and said, this is a repentant sinner who will be forgiven today in this household. So he had the eye of this person who was repenting, but yet Simon had the eye of this person who was bad and sinner. If you remember the passage of the parable of the workers in the vineyard, right? The people that came at the beginning of the day, then at the third hour, the sixth hour, and the 11th hour. And then at the end, the master was going to give them their wages. So he started from the least, the ones who came latest, and he gave the worker of the 11th hour the one denarii, just as he gave the ones that he agreed with in the first hour. So they complained against him. They said, How are you giving us only one denarii? We deserve more. You know what he said to them? He said to them, is it not lawful for me to do what I wish with my own things? Or is your eye evil because I am good? Is your eye evil because I am good? Sometimes we look at what other people have and we say, why not me? Why not me? Other people have things and are certain places and certain positions because this is God's road for them for their salvation. All of our roads are different. I don't have to be like this person. And if if we continue to look like this, as if we're doing this, why is God giving to somebody else and not me what I deserve? No, we deserve what we are allotted to us by God. The sixth evil eye is the boastful eye. The boastful eye. The one that says, I have ... whatever you want after this. I did this, I did that, I have achieved this, I've achieved that. This eye is the boastful eye. King Nebuchadnezzar, in the time of Babylon, these people came and captured Israel, and they captured most of this region in the Middle East, all the way from Iraq, all the way to the Mediterranean Sea. You know what he says about himself? He says, is not this great Babylon that I have built for a royal dwelling by my mighty power and for the honor of my majesty? So he said that he built it all. Actually, he didn't build it all. Maybe the people that came before him helped lay some foundations. He didn't do everything from scratch. It's just like somebody would say, you know, I built this church, or I built this city, or I built this country. No, you didn't build it. Our forefathers that came, they laid foundation stones, and we were entering into their labor. Be a little bit humble. That's why the book of Proverbs teaches us, pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. Where you see pride and arrogance, you can know that a fall is lying at the door. If I am prideful and arrogant in any way, maybe in school, in my work, in my service, whatever it might be, if there's a sense of arrogance and pride, believe me, the fall is on the door. And the fall will be for your own good and for your own salvation. The last evil eye is the eye that looks backwards. The eye that looks backwards. And this is the eye of Lot's wife. This is the eye of Lot's wife. Many people in their struggle and godliness sometimes will turn back. And they'll think to themselves, I'm here every Sunday, I have to wake up early, and I have to go to Sunday school, I have to do this. What would happen if I grew up in a family that was, you know, like my friends at school? Where I can just wake up, eat, sleep, and drink, and be merry, and do everything, and go and have sleepovers, and do this, and do that. What would happen if I could do this? These thoughts are from the evil one, because these are the thoughts of turning back to what was left behind. Why are my parents so strict? All of these things are turning back. Desiring the things of the world once we have the grace of salvation and godliness and holiness in our life. So what about the good eye? What about the good eye? The first good eye is the pure and the simple eye. And this is the eye of Hannah. Hannah is the mother of Samuel the prophet. She was sad because she didn't have any children. So she goes into the temple of the Lord and she kneels down and she's begging and pleading with the Lord, and she unloads all of her grief and her anguish on the Lord to the point where she's crying and her lips are moving. There's a priest sitting in the distance. His name is Eli. He looks at her with her lips moving and says, this lady's drunk. This lady's coming in here to the worship, to the temple, and she's drunk. So as she's leaving, he tells her, why are you drunk? And imagine what would happen. If you're doing this, you're coming to pour your heart, and then the priest says, you're coming to drink, you're drunk. You know what her response was? Let's see. She says, no, my Lord, I'm a woman of sorrowful spirit. She says, no, my Lord. Although the guy, told her she was drunk, and actually later, he's a corrupt, priest, and he let his children do things that are profane in the temple. So he wasn't the good example. But yet she still addresses him as my Lord. She doesn't lose his respect because he said something to her that maybe was offensive. If somebody says something to me that's offensive, how do I respond to them? Would I be able to respond and say, my Lord? She says, no, my Lord, I'm a woman of sorrowful spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor intoxicating drink, but I have poured out my soul before the Lord. Do not consider your maidservant a wicked woman, for out of the abundance of my complaint and grief I have spoken until now. Maidservant? My Lord? What kind of spirit is this? What kind of eye is this? This is the pure and the simple eye, that even when somebody's offensive, they can still take things with simplicity and purity and not react in an impulsive and negative way. St. Paul says, or St. Titus says, to the pure all things are pure, but to those St. Paul says to Titus, to the pure all things are pure, but to those who are defiled and unbelieving, nothing is pure. But even their mind and conscience are defiled. To the pure all things are pure. If I have a pure eye, I don't look at why people are doing this. Some people, you will look around and say, this person intended to do this, this, and this. This isn't a pure and simple eye. The pure and simple eye is the eyes of a child, right? I look at this and I take and I give everybody the benefit of the doubt, even if they have injured me before. Because if I don't give them the benefit of the doubt, that means I say there's no chance and there's no hope for them for repentance. And actually the person who pays the price for this is myself. I paid this price. If I don't choose to forgive anybody and give anybody a second chance and have this pure eye, I will live my life isolated. Because you'll find a problem with everybody. You'll say everybody that gives me a bad eye, says something to me negative, has bad intentions, and they're evil people or bad people. This is the evil eye, but the pure eye is the one that looks, as St. Paul says, to the pure, all things are pure. Number two is the content eye, the eye of content. Abraham, when he left, God told him, leave your family and go and follow me to a place that I will show you. He says, okay, Lord. He goes and he's following the Lord. The Lord blesses him and he prospers to the point where he and Lot, his relative, I think his nephew, they were too big. They needed to split the land. So he goes to Lot, who's the younger, and he goes to him, choose the land. It's like a son and a father. They're in a business together, and the father says to the son, choose what part of the business that you want. Well, Dad, I want this part of the business because it's most successful. This is exactly what happened. Lot said, I want the land of Sodom and Gomorrah because it's the land that's flowing with milk and honey and it has the most possibility for prosperity. So he says, go ahead. If you go east, I'll go west. If you go south, I'll go north. It doesn't matter. He was content by having God. He didn't care about the land. He knew that the prosperity came not because of the land, but because of I had God in my life. When we search after all of these positions and rankings and money in the bank and all of these things, we will never be content. The person who is wealthy and always concerned about his wealth is concerned about how to invest it and where it goes and is fearful to lose it and maybe might lose sleep over it. But the person who's يدوب على أدو makes ends meet, he can sleep peacefully. He does not worry about where his money is invested or whatnot. Maybe during this time of fasting, we can practice this virtue of contentment. How do we practice virtue of contentment? Is by giving thanks. To give thanks. Let's pick one thing a day and thank somebody for it. And thank God for it. Number four is the compassionate eye, the eye of the Good Samaritan, who saw the man who was beaten and bruised on the road and had compassion on him and said, I will help him. I just had somebody yesterday who came to me and asked, you know, I have a friend who is leading a wicked life and they need help in something. Should I help them? I told them, of course you should help them. Shouldn't agree with their wicked way of life, but you should help them. Because if you don't, you're not being like the Good Samaritan who's willing to help. Even the person, you know, who in our eyes may not be worthy. The Good Samaritan is a person who doesn't assess the worthiness of the people in front of them. but does it good because this is what God would do. And sometimes we might be more apt to do this with people outside our home. But how about inside our home? When my wife or my husband comes back from work and they had a hard day and they want to talk about it, do I say, you're always complaining, stop talking about it, just be thankful you have a job? Do I just close them off like this? Or do I listen to them and try to help them with what issues that they're having? Lend this compassionate ear. Learn to empathize with our brethren. The fourth good eye is the eye that covers the sins of the others. Eye that covers. You see sins and you can cover them for somebody. Remember the story of St. Macarius? One of the monks was, you know, messing around with a lady, and his brothers complained to St. Macarius about him, and he went in and they said, you got to search this guy's cell. She's hiding in there. So he put her under a pot, and then, of course, by divine inspiration, he knew that she was there. Being the elder, he went up and he sat on top of this pot. And he had all of the other monks go in and search the cell. Of course, because he was an elder, they were embarrassed for him to ask him to get up. So after he was that, he told them, see, you saw nothing. Now go and mind your own business. And then he's going, what did he do here? He saved this monk who repented, and he saved this woman who was under the pot, because he covered for their sins. Joseph the carpenter, when he found out St. Mary conceived, you know, without his seed, he was troubled. But what did he say? He says, then Joseph, her husband, being a just man and not wanting to make her a public example, was minded to put her away secretly. He was willing to cover for her sin. But God intervened and saw this just man and said, you know what? Let me show you what I'm doing. He covered for the other people's sin. The sixth is the humble eye, the eye that is meek, like the eye of the tax collector. The parable of a Pharisee and the tax collector. The Pharisee was saying, I'm good, I fast Wednesday and Friday, and I give such and such. And the tax collector is the one that says, I can't even lift my eye before you because I am a sinner. The last and final is the eye that focuses on heaven. The good eye is the eye that focuses on heaven. Always looking upward. All my actions and my choices in life are geared towards my salvation and the salvation of my family. St. Paul says to the Corinthians, he says, while we do not look at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. The things seen are things of the world, but we look at the things that are not seen, the heavenly things. And then he says, for the things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal. The things that aren't seen will last forever. As the Bible today says, don't store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and thieves break in and steal. Everything on earth can be corrupted, corroded, and stolen from us. Everything. If I have a nice house, it can be looted. If I have a nice car, it can be stolen. Everything is corruptible. Everything is subject to the time and to people. So we shouldn't store up for things ourselves things that can be that are perishable, but have the eye that is focused on heaven. How can I invest in the kingdom of heaven here on earth? So we said that we were on a journey from earth to heaven during these holy 50, this holy great Lent. And our eyes should be kept on heaven. And our eyes on our body hold the key to our body. Our eyes hold the key to our body and to our soul. So we should keep a watch lest they be corrupted. And that's why the Lord finished the verse and he says, if your eye is good, your whole body will be full of light. If you have a good eye, all of your actions and your surroundings will be full of good. If everything is bad around you, then maybe we need to assess my eye. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. And then he says, if therefore the light that is in you is darkness, how great is that darkness? How can light be darkness? He's saying here, if the small ounce of hope or the small ounce of anything that you have that you see in this world, which is the light, is darkness, then how about the rest of my life? If there's something small that is light and it's dark, then how about the rest of my life? So we said the evil eye is the eye that lustful, discontented, merciless, mockery, overcritical, boastful, and the eye that looks backward. But the good eye, in which we should strive for, is the pure eye, the content eye, the compassionate eye, the eye that covers the sins, the humble eye, and the eye that focuses on heaven. May God grant us to assess our eyes during this great Lent and during this week, and to transform our eyes, if there's any wickedness or evil in it, to transform it into the good, an eye that is focused on the kingdom of heaven. And glory be to God forever and ever. Amen.